Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, hi, everyone. Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Amol from Growth Idea. Amol, how are you today?
I'm very well. How are you, Saul? Great to be here with you.
No, thanks. It's really great to speak to you. We've got a lot of like pretty, timely sort of things to talk about too, but in your area of expertise. But before we get into all that side of things, for those who are listening who have no idea, who've never heard of Growth Idea before, haven't heard of you, would you be so kind as to tell everyone like a little bit about you, I guess, Growth Idea generally, and then also, like your journey from, well, however early you want to start up to this point.
All right. I'll do that. So I'll start a little bit about Growth Idea, then I'll go back into a bit of where I come from and what's led to the main topic of the day or the conversation around the book. We are a UK-based business coaching organization. In fact, we're one of the largest UK-based business coaching organization, Growth Idea. And we focus on SME business coaching. Our motto, as you would probably have seen on our website, is creating better realities. So yes. The reason we all started this about 15 odd years ago, we and a bunch of other coaches, is we felt that business owners should be making a lot of money. They should be working on things that they love. They should be providing employment to people that they love, care, and respect for. And that's not the reality that they find themselves in. The reality they find themselves in is we're struggling for money. And we've heard enough of these stories. I was listening to your podcast where some of the other coaches and other people who have come on have started talking about how their parents used to come in all stressed and what was happening, which inspired them to become business owners and help other business owners. And I've always felt that this is not how it should be. This should not be the reality that people are faced with. They should be having enough money. They should be living the life that they dream of. So that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to create better realities for business owners. We've been doing it for about, I've been personally doing it for about 10 plus years. The firm has been around for around 15. My background in my previous life, I was an investment banker. I used to work with Morgan Stanley. I moved to this field for, among other reasons, that my partner was running this business, and she said, "Well, why are you working for someone else when you can work for me?" So I decided to.
That's a great.
So I decided to drop and say, "All right, let's do this for ourselves." And obviously, working with small medium enterprises, as you yourself would know, is has a thrill of its own, has a benefit of its own in terms of the fulfillment that it gives you as a business owner.
It's really true.
So that's a quick whistle stop around what we do and what my background is.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you. And that's, yeah, it's so true. I'm not a coach, obviously, but I do like very strongly relate to that. Like as in sort of many ways, I end up having, not the same sort of deeper level of conversations that you probably have, but it's certainly something that I've always really loved as well is generally sort of helping people. But I also very strongly relate, and it seems to have been an ongoing sort of thread. People, yeah, pretty consistently talking about their sort of struggle, and I think it's always been relevant, I guess, for people, you know, to change that reality. I was going to actually bring that up later on, that particular your tagline, because I found it really interesting. Like in that it's in some ways quite a obvious thing to say, I guess, being a coach, but it seemed to have a little bit of a different twist on it, because instead of just going it's much more high level, I guess, in that like you're aiming To me, when I hear that, it's like aiming sort of much higher in a really nice, broad sort of way. Saying like to change your reality, and you obviously have to have all the right steps to do that. But on that topic, I suppose too, what would you say about what would be one of the very first things, like say somebody you're speaking to a small to medium enterprise in any industry, I would say like there's probably very common threads amongst a lot of businesses, but when somebody first comes to you and they have, XYZ range of different things that they need to have assistance with, what would you say is one of the most important first initial things that you talk to them about that you feel you need to get right? What would that be? Is there one thing?
Actually, yes, there is one thing. So we have a process where we go through, we start building the fundamental business, building blocks of the business. So there's multiple things obviously that are involved in the business that we would work with. But the secret to the one thing I think is in the tagline itself. We say we are creating better realities. So the first question always is, well, what is the better reality for different people? What's better for me might not be the same thing which is better for you. The reality that I want for myself. Some people want to be billionaires. Some people want to have all the time in the world and just not worry about their business. Some people want to employ tons and tons of people, and that's the reality that they want. So that's really the first question. What is it that we want in life? And what is it that we want in business? Once that is defined, what you've done is you've, in a way, and again, I'm going back to a podcast of yours, you've in a way defined your North Star. And then you can come back from there and say, all right, let's now build the steps to get us there, get us in that direction. For me, then the fundamental steps become establishing what's current reality. So I've established what the reality we want to get to is, and then we establish, well, what's the current reality, which in my mind comes down to numbers. So let's look at the dashboards of the business. Where's the business right now? How many people do we have? How much time are we spending as a business owner spending in the business? Is the business making any money? What's the pathway from where we are right now to get to where we, and you know this, as in if you work with any coach, you know that this is broadly the basic grow coaching model that I've established the goal. I've established what the reality is, and then I can structure a pathway towards it. So we have a fairly robust methodology of structuring the pathway. The first step, I define the goal. I define, well, what's your better reality? Then I define, well, where are we right now? And this establish the base level, the foundational level of dashboards and scoreboards for that. And that's when the journey really kicks off.
Yeah, it's interesting. It always sounds so easy, doesn't it? It sounds like it's really like when you say, well, you need to obviously have a goal in order to be able to achieve it. So let's just do it. But I mean, I would generally assume, because I was at a business networking conference recently, and there was a topic, with many of the speakers in one way or another that was, it's an ongoing topic. And it always sort of strikes me that it's still like, I wouldn't expect anytime soon that that's going to stop being an important thing to talk about, because there's always like new people coming into business too. So it's always, always going to be these realizations for people who are in business, who wanted obviously just improve, like you were saying, like their goals, people's goals then change too.
And you referenced a really good point. You said it sounds easy. Actually, so we have a slightly different tinge to this. We say that actually it's simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. And a lot of us, people who consult, a lot of business owners itself, a lot of the gurus, they complicate it and they start making it sound as if it's rocket science. And the point of doing that is just, well, I've got an IP. I've got something special. But what I've found over 10 years of doing this is actually it's actually really simple, but simple doesn't sell. The exciting bit is, well, this is our specific model that works. What we have found though is that it's not easy. Because what you need to do with the simplicity is you need to do it again and again and again. And that's the bit that is not easy. So you need someone holding you to account saying, all right, let's see, it's simple. Let's build a dashboard. Let's write down how much we're making right now. All right. So tomorrow we'll get up again and we'll write down again. Well, how much are we making right now? Every quarter we'll sit down and we'll say, okay, what's the goal now? What have we done last quarter? So that's the bit. So it's the reason people fall out of love with it is because it's actually quite repetitive and boring, the simple stuff. Mm. And so you then run after the next shiny object and the next shiny object, and you forget that actually at fundamental levels, what are we doing in business? We're just trying to create value. So if I can measure that value, that's all I need to do. I don't need, it's as in most businesses, I'm sure there are some, but most businesses are not rocket science. They're actually very simple at the fundamental level.
Yeah. Is there an equivalent terminology or way of explaining a similar idea that you would have in sport, like when you're working your body and you get muscle memory? Is there a equivalent term, or do you just use that sort of term, like, but in some other way, like the thing that you, because you were talking about building up, you know, it's obviously to some extent building up, you know, good habits and just general practice, which I like sport and doing various things and done, you know, martial arts and things over the years. And so for me, like, I always see a very strong correlation between those things of just general practice, but it's easier and it's far more just readily acceptable in sport that's what you got to do, because otherwise, like, you actually, because it's physical, like, because you have to do it. So everyone's just like, well, obviously, yeah, I have to do it. But then when it comes to mental things, except for maybe like task based sort of exercises, like say what I do on software, like you do it enough that you become really efficient, really good and creative, and you don't have to think about it, and you build up a certain muscle memory maybe in your hands. And
you're spot on. It's the habit, it's the muscle memory. The reason a lot of these sports analogies work is because they make sense. You wouldn't think that you're a professional sports person if you're not getting up every day, putting the discipline in, putting the hours in. But business owners don't think like that. They get up one day, they set up a company, and they say, oh, I'm a professional business owner. So you've not built the habit. You've not built the discipline. You've not built that muscle memory, as you're terming it. And if you're not doing that, then how do you call yourself a professional? Why do you call yourself a professional? Are you doing, Bruce Lee had this really famous saying, I'm sure you've heard of it, that I don't fear the man who's practiced 10,000 kicks. I fear the man who's practiced one kick 10,000 times.
Yeah, and that's a great quote.
And you think of it and you're like, that's really boring, isn't it? One kick. So you get up every morning for 10,000 days and you practice that one kick. That's really boring. But that's what makes the person really fearsome and really formidable as an opponent. Not someone who's going in every day and saying, okay, let's try something else. And you'll probably relate to this picture of the business owner going into the business and say, oh, let's see what fires I have to fight today. That business owner is saying, well, let's practice another kick today and another kick today and another kick today. And they're forgetting that actually it's very simple. You just focus on the fundamentals and then you do them again and again. That's the sports person analogy. You're getting up, you're exercising, you're warming up your muscles before you start. Everyone does that. And you do the same actions again and again until it really goes into your fiber. Then you start thinking, okay, where are the incremental improvements?
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I think I remember this thing that an instructor of mine said years ago, and I'm gonna mess up the exact data, but like the general idea is there, which is that it's something along the lines of, like, for you to be able to say, if we're talking about a kick or any specific kind of physical activity, you have to do it something like, you know, 10,000 times in order for it to become automatic. But you only then have to do it something like 30 times the wrong way in order for you to get back to square one, like to have to kind of restart, which is like a rather demoralizing kind of thing to think about. But you do see that in practice though. And once again, like it's far easier when you do physical things because you can feel it, you know, and you can go,
yeah.
Oh, and you just know automatically. I mean, to some extent, I guess that's true, like with human relations, like you know when things are working and you know when things feel right or wrong. But then, you know, I guess like, could you speak to say the point at which those ideas then meet like the hard reality of you, like then starting to break things down for people, you know, of the general idea, then you go, okay, let's get into the nitty gritty now.
Of course. No, I see where you're coming from completely. And yes, you're right. That's a really good quote, but you're right. If you start doing something wrong again and again, that's also habit formation. So you're forming a habit and you're forming either a good habit or a bad habit. And you would have seen now, there's now quite a few good authors who have written about the power of compounding, the power of making sure that how small things lead to big results. And all you're doing with this is you can do a bad habit again and again and again. That's what your number 30 comes from. In the first time, it doesn't matter. Second time, it doesn't matter. Third time, it doesn't matter. After time 30, all of a sudden you start seeing the difference. And now you have one person who's done the same thing correctly for 30 times. You didn't see it the first 29 times. So you think it's happened on the 30th time, but actually gradually you've just been increasing the gap between you as the person who's doing the right thing versus the person who's doing the wrong thing. And that gap is going to be extremely difficult to catch up with.
Yeah.
So how do you identify this? Actually, that's kind of where we've kept coming back to. And this is why I think for me, coming at it from a financial perspective has always been, it's in the numbers. If you can see it if you can measure it, then you can start changing it. And how do you measure it? Most of these things are numbers. So you can break it down and you can start looking at the numbers and see if the numbers are moving in the wrong direction or the right direction. And yeah, numbers, this is the power of numbers, right? You can see a difference of 100. You can see a difference of a 1. You can see a difference of a 0.1 or a 0.001. It's that.
Yeah, they don't really lie.
Very small change.
Yeah, they don't really lie, do they?
Yeah, they're telling you the direction, and it's just for you to look at it and say that, okay, am I willing to read it and not be afraid of it? Or am I going to say that, well, actually, there's lots of things that would have affected it, and let's look at these subjective parts of what's making a difference or what's not making a difference.
Yeah. So what are some of like the key mistakes, I guess, if we're talking about, well, could be someone starting or at any point, you know, during somebody's business journey, what are some of the key mistakes that people should avoid, you know, when they're, well, yeah, it's a long list. Is it a long list or is it?
Well, it's a good question. So let me go back to the fundamentals. I think the first thing you have to think about, I'm sure you've worked with businesses. We've worked with over 1,000 businesses now. So if I were to say something that fundamentally comes across, what comes across is the fear people have of these, of numbers. People start to think of, well, I'm running my business. I know how to do my business. I don't know how to measure my business. And in the UK, at least, you have to file your accounts once a year. And you don't have to file it. Your accountant has to file it. So there's tons of business owners who are sitting there and their accounts come to them once a year. And they look at them once a year and say, oh, did I make money or did I not make money? And they start thinking, well, this is too complicated. It's not my job. My job is to run my business. So the moment you've said that, you've effectively shut off a part of your brain, which is willing to now go look at those numbers. So for me, and as I know, I have an investment banking background, so I have a bit of a blind spot in trying to understand why people can't see numbers. But I see it again
course.
And again.
Yeah, yeah.
But I see it again and again. People don't look at it because they don't want to look at it. They have a lot of the people that we speak to have a bit of an imposter syndrome. They're like, well, actually, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I'm doing the right thing. I'm kind of playing it by the fly. I don't want to look at my numbers in case they tell me something else. And you know what? There is this dirty little secret that actually my books only I see. So I don't show my books to other people. And most business owners don't show their books to other people, their numbers to other people. So it's their secret. If they're not doing well, it's their secret. If they're doing well, it's their secret. What people see is, all right, how snazzy does this person look? How much do they seem to be spending on the office? How much do they seem to be spending on how their website looks? Those are things that people see. So all of a sudden the business owner is like, okay, I can fake it. And then if I keep faking it, I can make it. And I don't really need to look at my financial numbers. So this whole gambit of mindset becomes the first hurdle really that we have to get through to say that, well, actually, hiding from the truth is not going to erase the truth. And the fortunate thing is only you need to know the truth, but you need to know it. If it's your business, you need to know it.
That's very true. I actually feel I used to, the fake it till you make it thing that you're referring to. I'm like, you hear that all the time. People are always like, hey, fake it till you make it. And it's like I've actually changed my opinion on how I view that these days. I used to just generally, go along. I suppose I didn't probably really think about it that much because it's usually like a bit of a joke and it's usually, said in that lighthearted sort of way. And people, I think, intuitively kind of relate to it. Like everyone goes, yeah, that's right. But I almost feel a little bit like I don't feel it's super negative, but I almost feel, especially in the context of what we're talking about, I almost feel like it does people a bit of a disservice. Like in that whilst people are like it maybe not everybody, and I haven't done like a deep dive analysis on this, that's for sure. But like I do feel like people are generally, they're probably in business to some degree because they're very good probably at what they do. And whilst they might not be across, certain other aspects like their finances and other things, I feel like it's to some extent that dumbs down their perspective a little bit, like instead of saying that. I know it's said in a lighthearted way, but if we're talking about all those little things like building up a certain muscle memory and habits, maybe that also applies then to, a consistent thinking this way or a consistent thinking another way. And if we follow that it takes less things consistently that are negative to have an impact than it does, it takes more things in a positive way that you have to do more consistently to get like great results.
Yep.
Then that's a bit of a problem, like in my mind. And that always used to really stick with me in martial arts because, as soon as my instructor said that to me, I felt this wave of sort of real pressure to make sure I did it right every time because I was like, well, I got a pretty long journey like to get then to this really like it's not saying that you can't after like 30, 50, 60 times, you can't be doing it okay, but it's the point of where you start to do it automatically without thinking that it's like that's a long way away, but it's really easy to do it the wrong way and then to be stuck in that. So,
the slight, I guess, difference between how you would, and I understand, I do martial arts too. Well, I used to do Kung Fu. And I understand that once you get the wrong form, trying to get back to the right form is extremely difficult. In business, as in, you can make it easier. So when we run our lives, we still have, all of us have those 24 hours of the day. When I pick a habit, for example, if I pick, well, all right, I need to start looking at my financials on a regular basis. I need to start looking at what my profitability is on each product. If I do that, I can say that, well, actually, all I need to do is spend 15 minutes or half an hour a week on it. And that's all I'm doing. So all of a sudden, what I've done is really introduced a new habit that I'm then starting to build on top of. So I start saying that, okay, this is the new habit that I would have. I would potentially sit down with my finance person 15, 20 minutes every week. I'll potentially sit down with my own numbers 15, 20 minutes. I'll potentially, you know, this is how reading also works, right? Any new habit formation, I'll spend 20 minutes a week, 20 minutes a day reading something, reading about the numbers, getting over this. And I always feel that a lot of it is, a lot of the blockage, a lot of the hurdle is mindset related. It's nothing else. It's really simple stuff. And that's in a way what I've tried to outline in my book is there's a lot of, there's a big market for complicating things, and making the next shiny object. There's a small market for, well, that's simple. That's kind of the market I'm trying to address, because the reason a lot of business owners don't go there is because no one's telling them, well, actually it's simple. Just follow 1, 2, 3, 4. These are the steps, and you do it consistently and it'll become, it won't be easy, but you have to do it consistently. It's actually simple.
Mm. I think in a way, like it's, I'm sure you probably don't view it like this, but I feel like that's sort of I'm not sure whether brave move is the right sort of term, but I do like very strongly relate to like the whole thing of I mean, there'll be like, you know, thousands, tens of thousands, you know, maybe hundreds of thousands of like, you know, people out there who do coaching and advice. And I mean, heaps of people do, I mean, great things, obviously, but there is certainly a very like strong urge for people in order to split themselves up from other people to appear different, which, I mean, even just that would lead to, you know, forcing them into thinking of a different way to explain what is actually simple when like just for the purpose of their own market. So like just saying it how it is kind of, well, I mean, like I said, like it seems to me like from, you know, if you're, you know, trying to place yourself in your market as a coach is like an interesting move. But in the same time, you could argue too that then that's actually like a really fresh approach, because people don't often just say how it is. You know, it's why I guess, you know, in some respects, certain people in the political spectrum, when they come into that world and they don't talk the same language as like other people, all of a sudden people are like, oh wow, he's just talking like a normal person. Or like, you know, she's just, you know, saying how I would say it. You know, it's obviously not quite the same thing, because you're also coming from a very, very informed point of view and you're breaking it down, but it's still, but that simplicity is obviously at the heart of most things, I would argue.
I see exactly where you're coming from. And yes, there is, well, this is the world we are in, right? Everyone is trying to establish their niche. What's special about their niche? What is special about what they offer? We have, and to be fair, we do it in our business also. We have our own proprietary model. We go through, well, this is how we was built. These are the foundational steps. The couple of things that we decided to do slightly differently, was one is we started saying that, well, there's coaches and there's coaches. And we don't want to just be people who are standing on the side and advising. We want to do it for ourselves. So we over the last multiple years, we've been acquiring businesses. So we now run businesses with about 240, 250 people employed. We run them through the same steps that we're doing for all the businesses that we are advising. So I know that I've kind of eaten almost everything that I'm advising. All the cooking that we're doing, we've done it in our businesses. Oftentimes we relate to our clients because, well, we've felt their pain in our own businesses. So that's one thing that we decided to do consciously, just to make sure that we were not talking for the sake of talking. And I guess that's also where the simplicity comes from. You can only do it if you take the fluff away and you say, well, all right, what's at the heart of it? It's the fundamentals. And then the second bit we said was, well, we'll never be able to reach out to the kind of audience that, for example, when you do a podcast, you're offering it out to a large variety of a long list of people. And we said, well, we won't really be able to do that with our business, because a lot of our business is one-on-one and group advisory. That's where the book comes in. So we've kind of led with the book, especially on finance. Because we're like, well, we can get to a lot of people this way for effectively the price of what, 3 or 4 cups of coffee. You get about 20 years of experience in finance in a very simplified way. And what that does is they're sitting with you on your bookshelf, helping you with, well, I probably get a pound out of that that back to myself. But it increases the amount of reach, and that makes it simple. And I sincerely believe that the simpler it is, the more people are starting to look at these things objectively. And the more we start going to the fundamentals, the bigger the benefit that will be for everyone. Because it is an increasing pie in terms of how the world works. The more people who are clearly aware that, okay, this is how we should think, this is the right financial way of thinking, the better the entire the economies of the world would be, which are mostly made up of the businesses we work with, the SME businesses.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, it's certainly the case in Australia that where I think at this thing I was at recently, it was like something like that was what somebody said, and it was a nice way to say it. They were sort of saying that I think it was 93% or something like that. They were saying, 93% of the economy is sort of small business, but then they were sort of saying, like, the small business really is the economy, which is true. So small, and they were speaking about, I think, small business specifically, but it's a really important point, and it does have a certain effect when you say it like that. Certainly when you're in small business and you're very insular most of the time and you're thinking about what you're doing, and rightly so. I mean, like, you're trying to make things work and you got a family and all that sort of stuff. But then it's nice to feel part, even if it's in little glimpses, like you're obviously a part of like a much bigger thing that's very important to the economy of like all countries. It's sort of the engine that drives everything, really, isn't it?
Of course. And this is it. There's actually another reason why finance cannot be complicated. As in, people across the world for the last several years, decades, have been working to try and systemize, to try and make it simple. So if today I can look at a profit and loss statement, and I can look at one from a company in Australia and a company in the US and a company in India and a company in the UK, and they will all look very similar. So this is combined efforts of lots of people who've effectively been saying, okay, let's get rid of the fluff. Let's focus really on what matters and make sure that everyone is thinking and reporting it the same way. And that's it. So I now know that every profit and loss account will have, well, you have sales, you have cost of goods, so you have gross profit, you have some costs, so you have net profit. That's it. I can see that across all P&L. It's as simple as that. It doesn't need to be complicated. I can make it complicated by saying, yes, but you have 15,000 different products, so you have 15,000 different kinds of sales. Really? As in, it doesn't matter, right? As in, you can break it up and you can make modules out of it as much as you want. But at the fundamental level, I can speak to everyone across the world in exactly the same language of business, which is, well, what's your number? What's your top line number? What's your bottom line number? How do I improve those numbers?
Mm. Yeah, sure. So the book is called SCORE, right? So SCORE, right. Master Opportunities, Avoid Mistakes, and Build a Financially Successful Business, which is, I'm often more predisposed, I guess, like a lot of people are, to nice, short, punchy sort of titles. But I actually think that's, whilst it's a lot longer, I think it's actually kind of really important. You still got like 3 key things there, but could you, I guess, talk about it may seem obvious to people, but just to hear it from you, why the SCORE part, like what's the, is, you know, it's, to hear what, why you called it that. Why you and like Shweta called it that. I'm not sure whether that was your, was that your idea or Shweta's?
Well, I'm going to claim it now that she's not here. So. But I think it was a joint discussion. But the word is actually going back to the sports analogy that you were doing. You imagine any sport that we are playing, there's always a scoreboard. You always know what's happening. And if you're, I'm sure you're following the cricket. If you're following the cricket, then you can see that, well, you can't really go on there and say, all right, let's just play until we get tired. You don't do that. And you don't do that in any sport. You always need to keep your eye on, well, what's the score? Who's winning? It's usually a competitive thing. That's also why you need to keep score. So you can't run a business and then turn up every day and say, all right, let's see how today turns out to be. You need to kind of keep score. That's really what the reason for the title was. Have the score, know what the score is in your business, know what you're running towards, what you're gunning towards, and be able to measure the reality. And you will see, if you look at a little picture of the book, you'll see that the word score has been written in little numbers. And the reason we've done that is, well, that's it. It's a number. The score is a number. The score is not, I feel good today and all 20 of my employees feel good today. That's not the score. The score is I have X in my bank. I have Y in my revenue last year. I have X number of clients. My per client income is Y. That's what the score is. It's a very specific number. I know when I look at that number, are you winning? Are you losing?
Yeah, I guess it's also.
When I say I know, you know for your business, you're like, well, am I doing better than last year? Am I doing better than 2 years ago? Have I done a good deal? Have I not done a good deal? It's a yes or no answer. It's a numerical answer. And that's what we're trying to come back to in score, saying, well, I can, and we see this enough with business owners. You spend the entire year and you feel like you've had a good year and you feel like you've achieved a lot and you feel like your team is very happy with you and your customers are very happy with you and it's been a hard year and you've not looked at the scoreboard. So what if, why have you not looked at the scoreboard? That's the point we're trying to get to.
Yeah, interesting. That's interesting because if you take, I mean, it's not always a direct, accurate sort of analogy, but if we go back to any scoreboard in any sport, like outside of just having a hit with a friend, like if you're playing, you know, squash or whatever. So I play squash. So if I was playing squash and you're just having a hit, which we do, that's just for fun. But then when there's a direct correlation between more often than not between being competitive and scoring and, like, you know, keeping score, because then you want to keep score. The interesting thing though, and I mean, this might be an interesting thing to discuss now then too, is that how do you find, like in sport, you're keeping score and it's not always a positive thing. It's like you're keeping score has a emotional effect, but the actual act of just keeping score or focusing too much on the score in the wrong ways too. Like what sort of things have you seen happen? I'm sure, yeah, I sort of see you smile. I see like there's probably like a lot of things that have happened, but can you speak to, some of those things, like the positive and sort of negative effects that can actually have on people when they over-focus on it?
Yeah. And you're right. We get a lot of people who, when we start speaking to them, they're not looking at it because, well, it's scary. So you don't watch horror movies when you don't want to see horror. And some of your financial statements are sometimes horror, little horror films that are going on. So you don't look at them. I always come back to this as not looking at them is not going to make them go away. There is at the fundamental essence of every business, of every person, there's truth. The least you can do if you're being honest with yourself is approach the truth. Look at what the truth is. Accept what the truth is. That's when the journey forward starts happening. And this is also therefore a conversation that you need to have, saying, well, what are you doing hiding from the truth? At least know what the truth is. And if that makes you unhappy, then say that, all right, I choose to be unhappy, or I choose to accept, look at the truth and say, all right, I'm not going to do anything about it. And this is why, and you probably know about this. This is why sometimes it's a little difficult to work with coaches, because the coach will tell you exactly that, saying, no, don't turn your back there and try and keep scoring the basket. Look at the scoreboard. You're losing. And I can't have this is it, right? I can have an amateur, a non-professional basketball player who's like, well, I don't really care about the score. I'm here for the fun of it. I'm not in business. I spend all my life. Most of the people we work with spend all their life in business. So they get up in the morning, they're thinking business. They sleep at night, they're thinking business, and they're thinking it all through while they're awake, probably when they're dreaming also. So you're doing this as a professional. You're not doing it to have fun. When you're doing it as a professional, whether it's a good, it's good news or bad news, you look at the score. And you remind yourself that, okay, whatever it is, this is the reality. It might be shit. Sorry, excuse the language, but
yeah,
it is what it is. I accept it. That's my first step to moving forward.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, it's interesting. Like I went to a squash event just over the weekend, and there was a guy who actually won the PSA, like the professional sort of part, like the Open, and he was very emotional at the end of it too. And I thought that's like, it's, I mean, one, really nice to see that, but two, it was interesting because you see this direct correlation then with how hard he's obviously worked. Like he's worked and he's at a very high level, but then even when you're at this level and this level and this level and the higher you go, there's still always another level higher and there's still always,
of course,
more you can learn. And but you know, it's great. Like it's an interesting, I guess, relation between that and business, because like you do hit goals like sometimes, and you know, it's obviously then your role, I would imagine, to be able to, like, even with those people who are performing at any level, like you said right at the start, to actually go, there's obviously very high level goals, you know, sort of broad, like I want to have this sort of life and et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, is it really correct to say, like, from your perspective and like all those different sorts of goals people have, then to work out how to reverse engineer that into things that, you know, you're able to break down and actually able to quantify, and, you know, and with the numbers, that would be like what you do.
No, you're spot on. And there's now enough research that says that, well, actually, we're making choices all the time. What we can start doing is we can start designing our own lives. We can start saying, well, all right, how many years do I have on this planet? Within that, how much do I need to invest in my business? Within that, where do I need to get my business? How much time do I want to? So I can make these choices unconsciously, or I can make them consciously. That's all the score is asking you to do. It's starting to say that, well, let's move some of these choices from the unconscious realm to the realm of, okay, I'll take these positive, conscious choices. Once I know that, okay, if I've defined my reality as, well, actually what I want to do is, you probably heard of the FIRE movement, the financial independence movement. Mm-hmm. So if you've defined your reality as, well, by 35 or 40 years old, I'm going to be financially independent. Then we can work backwards from that goal. We can work backwards to, okay, how many years do we have? What kind of expense do we have? What kind of income do we have? All in numbers, and we can get to the goal. If I today say that, well, I would like to be financially independent, but I won't look at the score for the next 20 years. There's a chance that you get there, but the chance of you getting there has reduced significantly. And that's very simply personal finance. And I can do the same in business. I can say that, well, I would like to only work 5 hours a week in the business. Mm. So not even money. So 5 hours a week and I make a certain amount of money. If I don't measure it, there's a chance, and this is it, right? There's the ultimate lottery is that it just happens and you're lucky. That's the ultimate. That's what everyone looks for and says, oh, that I've seen one person who's done that and therefore maybe it'll work for me.
Yep.
But the well-trodden path is, well, you measure it, you monitor it, and you work towards it, and your probability of success significantly improves. It doesn't guarantee success, but your probability of success significantly improves.
Yeah. I feel like there's actually, this is a topic that you sort of hear across some, I guess, you know, once again, back to sport, but you hear it in business and other various aspects of life about the idea, which I really like. I'm certainly no expert at sort of, you know, embracing things at heart. I don't think anyone is, you know, except maybe for, you know, some sort of really hardcore people. But like the idea of embracing as much as you can the idea that things aren't going to be easy. Like, I think that's a really powerful thing that when you're able to do it, and like of just going, you know, I know things aren't going to be the ideal setup that I want it to be. Like you're talking about the person who saw somebody do it and it seemed really easy. Therefore, you know, you should be able to do it, because that, you know, a lot of people want a quick fix, or like, you know, to be able to somehow it magically just all happen. And like you said too, I mean, sometimes you just get lucky and that does happen and then it becomes like a thing. But like to actually, you know, is like from the emotional and intelligence aspect of what you obviously work with people on too, like is that idea of embracing like change, or embracing the fact that things are going to be tricky, something you talk to people about a lot?
Look, I do have a belief here. And the belief here is that actually easy or difficult is really on how you perceive it.
Sure.
So a lot of people go through a lot of, so I've had conversations in which I've been talking to a person about the great weather we're having right now, and they're talking back to me about the shit weather we're going to have over the weekend. So it's the same thing. Each person is focused on. So there is a, so yes, part of what we do is we try and make sure that people are starting to focus on the more positive things, because everything in life will have a positive and a negative. You try and see, well, are we able to focus more on the positives? And then you start saying, well, I can look at a goal. I can look at the person who won the squash championship that you were talking about and say, well, that'd be nice to have, as I would like to be that winner. He's obviously done a lot of work to get to that. If you want to do it properly, and in business, we have a choice. I could say that, well, yes, I would like to be there, but I'm not going to kill myself for it. So I'm going to make sure that I put in not the 10 hours a day that he was putting in. I'll start putting in 2 hours a day. I'll never be the champion that he was, so I accept that. But I start saying, well, I want these 2 hours that I put in, I'm really going to enjoy, and I'm going to measure my progress. And I'm going to see if in whatever game, as in how much better am I getting over time. So it's again the acceptance of reality and making sure that you're focusing on the positive aspect of what you're working on and what you expect to achieve. So it's no simple answer, and but there's enough support now in the world. Things like your podcast, leaders speaking about it, talking about, well, what does it take to keep a positive mindset? I just want to make sure that every day I have a friend I listen to, I read about, or speak to, who's reminding me to be positive. And that's the habit I want to build.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very understated sort of point, but I think it's incredibly important, because it's like the power in little incremental things, like in little parts being done consistently. And well, like especially just over the last year, I've actually found my wife and I had been speaking about this fact more and more across all things, that we feel that's at the heart of almost everything that is sort of done well, is to do things, you know, consistently in little small bits, but very consistently, because it sort of overcomes, like it seems to have like a almost magical quality of being able to overcome, you know, things that were just like a second ago a really big deal. You know, a great physical example that still I always kind of like marvel at is that, like, when you're doing, say, a stretch and you're not fully stretched, you can actually, you know, stretch in like a really, really, really long way more if you just, like, you know, creep your fingers forward in little tiny increments, and then go like a little bit more and a little bit more, and you pause like in between each one. Next thing you know, you're actually like at a really big full stretch. And I mean, that's just a metaphor, really, like for other things. But just on another sort of note, with businesses that you work with, what sort of things do you encounter, or do you encounter with multi-generational businesses, like people who are there's a older generation, father or mother, and they've got their family, and where that comes to their differing views on management and how that ultimately affects their you know, finances that you work with them on.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. And now that you mention it, as I'm thinking of the people that we work with, which are second generation, third generation. And I have, it's interesting that the generation that's made the money is very focused on the financials. So the people that we speak to who have made the money in the first generation, they're really focused on the financials. Partially, I think it comes because they've made it and they don't want to lose it. They don't want their second generation or third generation to lose it. But it could, from the depth in which they go into when they start looking at the numbers, it's also the reverse. I think partially they've been successful and been able to pass on to the next generation because they've been looking at the numbers. So the next generation comes in and they're running on the path that has been laid down by them by the previous generation. The previous generation is still providing those little, in bowling, you have those support arches, right? So your ball doesn't fall over the other side. So that support on both sides of the bowling alley, that's being provided by the first generation. And how are they doing it? Because they understand the numbers. They know that the balance sheet size is important. They know, well, what should be the margin on each of the products that is being sold or the service that is being provided. So they are kind of making sure that those checks are in place while the second generation runs it, which is why the second generation is able to build on top of it, because they have that little bit of support from the generation that has come before them, who have spent a lot of time actually educating themselves financially to make sure that they're building this wealth, which can become generational wealth. And this is, so a lot of times we talk to some of these owners, and their frustration, the second generation's frustration is, well, the old man has such a tight hand on the money. And the older generation's fear is that, well, this guy doesn't look at the numbers. So our role then becomes, well, all right, let's go back. Let's teach you the fundamentals. Let's show you that it's not difficult. How do you measure these numbers? How do you go back to the fundamentals? And this is the first section really of the book. So the first section of the book is really just talking about, all right, let's look at what revenue is. Let's look at what gross margin is. Let's look at what gross profit is. How can you make, how do people make mistakes in these numbers? So very fundamental. It's things that, and I've worked in finance, right? So I've had, super intelligent people working around me in finance. Everyone in that domain knows it. It's just one of the core fundamentals. And then you change your domain and you come and work with small businesses and people are ignoring it. And I'm like, how are you running your business and ignoring these fundamentals? So that's really what really the first 90-100 pages of the book are, just going back to the fundamentals, saying, well, understand this. Use this as a reference guide and you will have your accounting degree. You will start becoming the professional business owner that you want to be.
Is it also, because the topic that always crops up, and I'm sure this is like something you talk to people about all the time, is where those things you were talking about, that people, it's where they're kind of a combination of where their focus is, because they're just in sort of a maelstrom of, you know, other stuff going on. They're working in the business, they've got family, there's like crazy stuff going on all the time, they're super busy, and then just simple things like time management too, like seems to be, for me anyway, like, and I mean, maybe you can speak to this point, seems to be a really fundamental thing that underpins like the likelihood of success or not success. Because I would imagine, I mean, this is me speaking about my own experience about like becoming, you know, improving my time management. I'm certainly no professional at time management, but I feel like I've improved. But like analyzing that for me, even in little things, has been a bit of a game changer, like time management, allocation of things like. What are your thoughts on that as an important underpinning thing?
Yep, it's actually a significant portion of what we work on, and we do it through the numbers. So I start looking at, well, all right, so I can, and this is again an example from the book, I can look at any business and a business owner and say, okay, give me the profit that you've made last year. Give me the number of hours that you worked last year. If they tell me something like, well, I made $100,000, and I worked 10,000 hours in the business last year. So that's 100,000 by 10,000. So what they're really telling me is that I've worked at £10 an hour last year.
Mm.
That's what they're telling me. I've worked at £10 an hour. So your profit divided by your number of hours very simply is your per hour rate. Now, what can I do with that per hour rate? I don't want to work on £10 an hour, especially when you're a business owner. You don't want to work at $10 an hour, £10 an hour. So what do you do? You start picking, well, let's not manage the time. Let's not manage those 10,000 hours. Let's just manage the activities that we do in that time. So for most business owners, speaking to a prospect is extremely beneficial because the time that you spend with the prospect, if they convert, you will in an hour have the next $10,000. So your price of that hour is actually 10,000. You made £10,000 in that or $10,000 in that hour. Mm. So how much time should you be spending doing sales? You should be spending all your time doing that because all of a sudden you'll move from $10 activities to $10,000 activities per hour. So you've managed your activity. Now I don't need to manage my time. I can still spend the same amount of time if I just keep reminding myself that every day I need to do one of those high value activities. And if I'm doing one of those high value activities, automatically I'm starting to move in the right direction. That's the reminder that the moment I come in and I say, oh, the office is quite dirty today. Let me clean it up before I start work. You do that. You look at your office and you start saying, well, all right, let's spend about half an hour tidying everything up and I'll become really more productive. And there's someone else sitting in another office, probably next to you, who comes in the morning and he says, well, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to pick up the phone and call my prospect. I'm going to sell one website with one client call. How much profit is that going to bring in for me? And once I've done that, I can clean my office. But at the end of the year, you'll find you've made more money.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really key point too, because it's obviously time management, but it's the priorities that you set too, I suppose, isn't it? Like it's what's going to come first, because that does have, I mean, there's probably a lot of, you know, other interesting, psychological, things we could talk about, but as to how things, even when you do things set with, set a sort of a series of events that make you more productive, which I would imagine that would be the case. I'm sure, you know, that it sets you in a certain mindset. That's really, for example, on a reflective note about like the podcast that I do, I always feel after a podcast, sort of supercharged, like after a podcast. And I've often analyzed that and I've thought, why is that happening? It's probably because I've had really interesting conversations with everyone, but then I've been really like thinking really intensely around a certain subject, and often a subject that I'm not super familiar with. So I'm sort of like thinking about it. I thought, oh, that's really interesting. Like, is there something in that like, you know, how could you get into like a similar mindset in like another way? Cause I always find like when you go networking and you're talking with people and then like here on the podcast, like you're really, and I sort of came to a slight conclusion. It's not like the main thing, but it's mainly about then because I'm really focusing on other people. I'm not thinking about me. Like I'm really hyper focused on going, like, what are they doing and wanting to understand that because it's really interesting. There's like something in that, and I'm no psychologist, so I'm not going to.
No, I see what you're doing. Probably what one of the things that you've done is you've taken yourself out of the way of your own learning, and that starts helping. So for a lot of creative people, I see the same thing. A lot of creative people will consistently try and say, well, all right, the thing that really gets me in the flow is something that is creative, something where I'm interacting with people and discussing ideas gets me into the flow. Now, from my perspective, there's a few things that you can do consistently to convert that and convert that into what will make a difference to your bottom line. They say the best time for a salesperson to make a sales call is after he's just closed his client. So the moment you get a win, you pick up the phone and call again. That's really, right. that's proven in terms of how your momentum carries you into the next win. And you, and some of us refer to it as, oh, I'm on a winning streak. And so you feel that you're on the winning streak and therefore you keep going on. And there is some truth, some psychological truth to that. So the way you translate it, and most people, business people will translate it, saying is if they can choose to, they start saying, well, what really gives me that excitement and that energy? And when I have that, I will immediately after that, this is habit stacking, right? Immediately after that, I'll do the thing that is my highest pound value activity. So what makes me the most dollars? What's the thing that I've been putting on, which I know is the most important thing for me, that if I do that, it will make more of a difference than anything else. So I'll do that immediately when I'm on the high.
Yeah, yeah. I have. It's an interesting point because I've noticed on occasion, just intuitively, I all of a sudden have especially like once again, actually after podcasts or talking to people, or actually often talking to people on the phone, like a client, and talking through specific ideas, there's like a natural urge to like a more than usual motivation, just general sort of motivation of just like, I feel motivated. Okay, what else can I do? That just sort of seems to be there. And I've always thought, like, that's interesting. It's obviously just it's probably in some ways like it's related to probably chemicals and things that are going through your body that are sending, you know.
But nice... what you've done, Saul, is you've identified what triggers you, and that I think is a big boon. If you know that these are the things that really give me energy and make me happy, then you need to start using them. And also putting some of the things which probably don't make you happy, but you know you need to do, and putting these things together. So you're kind of starting to build on that momentum and on that flow. We have even in creative businesses, and we find that especially with creative businesses, sometimes they're less likely to talk non-creative, but sometimes the client knows already that, well, actually you're a creative. So on that part, you'll do a good job, but will you do the objective part well for me? And we've often changed some of our creative people that we work with to start saying that, well, actually don't talk about how nice a job you would do for them, give them the examples, etc. But then also talk about, well, when I build you this website, your conversion rates will move from the number that you have right now, which is 5% to 10%. Each deal for you is worth $1,000. When your conversion rate moves from 5% to 10%, essentially that means that the number of new clients you'll be getting will be doubling. So what's that worth to you? If that's worth about 200,000 to you, and so these are all numbers. Then if I'm charging £5,000, $5,000 for a website, I'm charging peanuts. So you've all of a sudden started moving from the creative, look, this, I'll do a really good job, to a place where you're saying, well, look at the numbers. This is a no-brainer. Why would you not do it? It's reference in finance. You keep looking at marketing, and a lot of people start thinking of marketing as an expense. But actually, if I can put $5,000 somewhere and make $200,000, how many times will I do it? I'll do it again and again. It's not an expense. I'll keep making a zillion every day. I'll get up and I'll say, okay, let's make a website for $5,000. Because you know what? It's making me $200,000. If the same happens with a branded ad, if the same happens with search engine optimization and more articles being put on my website, I'll put more and more money on it. The moment I can establish this, and if I have a creative person who can establish this for me, well, I will give them as much business as they can take.
Yeah, no, that's right. Actually, it's interesting, the thing about numbers from a visual point of view, because we do a lot of infographics, and I've always kind of marveled, like even though I'm actually doing them, I've always kind of marveled at the effect, which I sort of hesitate to use the word magical, because it's not really. It's just actually the what that represents to people. Like, I'm quite aware, like when you put, you know, numbers in a certain context with other visuals, and you do data visualization in a way that takes, you know, things that people are very used to seeing, like bar charts and, you know, pie charts and, you know, various things, but you put it into where sort of, I always think of it as like where art meets kind of engineering. It's like there's this idea of things being built and calculated, and then you put it in an artistic, creative context. It's like this really interesting meeting point that in people's minds, it's, you know, one, from a practical point of view, it just explains things really clearly and it makes people more likely to look at them. But like a key point there is still the numbers. Is still
you've combined two things. You've combined the emotions and the rational. And that's what your nice looking image about the number is telling you. It's saying, well, I like this and it's a good number. So you're getting two messages in your mind saying, well, why would I not buy? And there's a bit of psychology to it also. People want to make decisions rationally, but they don't make decisions rationally. They make most decisions emotionally, but they need some rational justification for it. When you're putting a really nice emotion out there, and then giving that they've already decided, oh, I love this. And then you're giving them the rational. Oh, you love this. You want to buy this. Oh, here's five other reasons how you can rationalize it. And then they'll be like, okay, I wanted to buy that really nice car. But really the reason I'm buying it is so I can ferry my kids up and down to their school. So you've given them the rationale and that's what makes them buy.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting point because I think there's a common, you know, misconception because you hear I guess people making an assumption about that people are going through like a series of more rational sort of steps to make a decision on something that they're going to buy. But the reality is they've probably already decided they want to buy it. And the rational things are really just there to help them to justify it in their minds and to go, am I right? Because then there's like, am I right? Should I be doing that? Maybe is it too expensive? You know, and then there's this whole series of things. Then if you've got, you know, supporting visuals, supporting information, you know, to help them to make sure that, like, really, because in a way, I guess you're only really helping them to support a decision that they had already made, you know.
You're spot on. They've made the decision instinctively and emotionally, and now you're giving them, well, material to justify that they're right.
You're almost, well, in a way, you're almost, because I mean, I do it. I mean, I know that when I've, you know, already decided something, there's a series of questions that pop up in your mind about often why you shouldn't. So like, are you then in a way, like the person who is selling the product or the service is really their job, you know, is to sit on the side of like the positive voice, you know, that's already made the decision, you know, being the supportive person, like the person that sits on your shoulder, like the good and bad one, you know, like they always have those cartoons, you know, with the one going, hey, you should be doing this. And the other one's like, you definitely shouldn't be doing that, you know, and you're the one going, yeah, it's the right decision for these reasons. But then, you know, it's the logical aspect, like the little scientist going, well, the reasons are, you know, and like, here's some information about it. Like, oh, yeah, well, you know, maybe that's true. But like, say, as we're getting towards like more towards the end of our chat, like when people are understanding their business finances, like they're trying to do that or they already do and you're helping them to understand them better in a more sophisticated and deeper sort of way. How can that, or what's the potential, I guess, for that to make them a better leader, like in either in their business or how that might flow into their lives even, I guess?
It's a really good question. So, you have to go back to, I guess, how each person defines leadership. Some people define leadership as inspiration and vision. Some people define leadership as, well, I'm able to lead my team. I'm able to get my team together and move them forward. you start asking the questions. Okay, let's become a little bit more objective, because you can have Steve Jobs and you'll find 50% of the people in working for him hated him, 50% liked him. So is he a good leader? So how do you start? So you have to come down to when you start asking the question, okay, let's go deeper. You will at some point start come down to numbers. And really for most large organizations, you start defining leadership and measures of leadership and you come down to the numbers. And the clear number in business is, has the leader created value? And I can measure that value. How has the leader created value? The leader has created value if the business that he runs has created value. If the business that he runs, how do I measure that it's created value? Well, if it's traded on the stock exchange, it becomes relatively simpler. I can see what the market capitalization of the business was and what it is now. So when the business, the head of Morgan Stanley, James Gorman, was just leaving. When he joined the business versus when he's leaving the business, you can see a clear trajectory. Has he added value? He's added tons of value. I don't need to know, was he inspiring? Was he getting people together? Those things had to happen for him to have created that value. Mm. I can do the same thing on a business project by project. I can say, well, what's the total capital that is invested in the business? What's the return that I'm getting on that capital? So if I can get a lot of return on that capital, more return than I would get on that capital invested elsewhere, then the business is creating value. So I can very clearly define for each. So I can, you might have a lot of people in your business that love you, a lot of your employees that love you. Mm. Does that make you a good leader if next year they're not going to have a job because your business goes bust? Or will you be a better leader if actually there's a few people in your business who actually dislike you? But you know what? You have next year another 20% people in the business who dislike you. And the following year, another 20% because your business is growing. And 80% of people like you, 20% don't like you. Every year, the number of people who dislike you in your business is growing. You know what? People who like you is growing too. But what's happening, you're creating value. So really the only measure, and again, I'm not discounting the subjective measures. Of course, they're important. But if you keep digging deeper, you have to start measuring and saying, well, what's defining is how do I say objectively, was this a good leader or not? And I have to come down to some number. And one of the numbers that in finance is quite clearly defined, which I can use, like I said, across businesses across the world, small business, big business, is value created. What's the return on capital that the business generated? What was the cost of that capital? Was there a difference? If there was a difference that I got the money at a certain rate, I invested it at a certain rate, I made more money, I've created value in the business. Mm. And that value is what then well, makes the economies that we were talking about grow. That people creating value is what grows economies.
Yeah.
So I know it's probably not the answer you expected, but that's the objective measure of leadership, really, from my perspective.
No, not at all. I think it's a great answer because I don't think I've probably asked anyone that question before anyway, so I have nothing to compare with. But I think your answer was great because it brings it back to sort of the bare bones about then, you know, still like the core starting point is like, what does that mean for this person is not the same as for this person. You know, it's a different, yep. You know, it's very different across, you know, the type of business. It's their person is, but I mean, I guess the takeaway from what you said once again, which has been like a common thread, obviously very closely aligned to your history and where you came from, is that like the numbers, like that the numbers don't really lie, and that they're like a sort of a symptom of other of everything else of what's actually happening. And I mean, I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. There's a tendency, I would imagine, there's a tendency when people hear you talking like that, or people talking about the numbers, that they probably tune out and they probably go, I would imagine, I'm just trying to think how, you know, maybe someone like yourself who's like you said before, like you, it's very hard to understand, like it is for me, like when people go, you know, I don't understand this about some aspect that I work in all the time. And it sort of seems inconceivable that they wouldn't know that. But I think it's really great though, that you're still like able to, even though it's about these sort of universal factors that are applied to everybody, that you can still bring it back to this very human kind of element, that it's actually reflective of what, you know, people are doing, and you're kind of reverse engineering it all in a way, which I really like. Like that seems like a very pragmatic, sensible way to go about it.
You can make your decisions by coming back to numbers. You can make them more objective by coming back to numbers. You can justify your decisions based on numbers. You can figure out whether it was a good decision or bad decision, again, on the back of numbers. So it's there. It is the truth. It's quite objective. It's like you said, some people start tuning out. So it's starting to address that and starting to say, well, actually, how do we make it simpler? And that's really the attempt is in teaching about this and in writing the book. It's about, well, how do I make it simple enough? So if you do tune out, then you have a book which works as a reference guide saying that, all right, this guy seems to be talking about this. Let's figure out what this particular topic means and just let's understand that. And it's simple, like, right? Like we were talking about the 4-hour rate. That's a simple concept. But if I think about it, my business will improve. That's it. I don't need to take anything else away from understanding financials than a 4-hour rate. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it would be to say, well, what's marketing? Why should I invest in marketing? If I can see a simple return that I spend $5,000, I get $200,000, and I can show that, and I can show that in whatever marketing I'm doing in my business and that you're doing when you're selling, that's all we need to take off. So it's filled with a lot of treasure out there, just in terms of numbers. You can pick one, and it will, each one of these makes a big difference.
Yeah, it's actually very true. I don't often, I mean, I'm not usually in the habit of talking about numbers a lot in what I do, but it's certainly actually now that I actually think about it, it is in one very specific area, which is when I'm explaining things to people who haven't got a great understanding of search online as to how that works, that I actually always say, you know, it's a numbers game, is that if you've got, you know, if you want to identify, you know, what you want to rank for, one, you need to first of all find out how many people are actually searching for that term in the first place, because otherwise you're just like shooting in the dark. You'll choose a term and it could have like, you know, 10 people searching for it every month. And then it's like, you know, you have your general likely conversion rate. So if you want to have, you can reverse engineer it. If you want to have X amount of conversions, you know, and if your average conversion rate is like, you know, 1 in 10, 1 in 5, whatever, you can easily then calculate how many people you need to have actually coming through as a lead. And then you're able to calculate how many people you have to have coming to your site generally as well. Yep. And then you can go, okay, well, that sounds like an awful lot. And you go, well, then you've got two choices. You either shoot for that, or then you lower what you want to do, or you choose then another like search term. So, I mean, it's, you know, it cuts through all the hyperbole of like, I feel like this is popular. Yeah.
And it's you know what, Saul, when you're doing that with your client, you're actually helping them see the truth and see, well, okay, how does this all work? And what you're going away from is what a lot of agencies rely on. Let's just confuse the mix so much, not show any of the numbers. So the client knows that we're doing a lot. And as long as they think we're doing a lot, they'll keep working with us and they'll keep paying us. And we just don't show them the numbers, which say, well, actually, we're doing a lot and the numbers are not moving. And what you're starting to say is, well, no, I'll show you the numbers. Here's the results. You can see this is working.
Yeah.
And that just differentiates you quite clearly for someone investing in your services. They would be like, well, I can see the results here. I can feel that person is doing a lot of work. So what do I choose?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, ultimately too, outside of, you know, it being, you know, really, I guess, immoral, it's also not very good business for everybody involved. Because ultimately, like, somebody's going to go to actually, like, it might be way down their journey where they're talking to the guy next door or to another person in business who actually informs them how things work. And then, like, the penny drops and they're like, oh, that's not right. You know, like, people eventually find out. So you need to you know, inform them. It's in everybody's best interests. But
it's sorry, go on.
No, you go. No, that's all good.
It's interesting because a lot of because there is so much potential complexity in a lot of these topics, you find whole industries which have a bad name. So agency businesses in general are perceived and looked at and saying, well, actually, you don't really tell us what you're doing. You just show us nice things. So that gets a bad name. We have the subcontracting and construction industry where most people, well, they say, well, you promised me 3 months, but I know you'll not be done in 6 months. You promised me a certain budget, but I know you will be double the budget. So you kind of have the whole industry, which is getting a bad name. And the idea is then you can be that, well, some of us can be that beacons of light where you're saying, no, I'll start correcting. At least around me, I'll start correcting that impression of the agency and of how people within that agency are, or with construction and how people within that construction are. And is that small change enough to create better realities for other people? I think it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a great way to kind of to then lead it. We use that as a great segue to go into you providing some quote that you either like or you feel is relevant for what we've been talking about or just otherwise. Have you got something you'd like to share with everyone?
I'm going to pick a quote based on some of the stuff that we've been talking about. So a big theme of what we've been talking about as well, you can ignore things and not look at the truth. And it works some of the time. Eventually, it will stop working. And that's when you effectively wake up one day with no money. This is a Warren Buffett quote. And you might have heard of it. Only when the tide goes out do you discover who's been swimming naked. So when the tide is high, everyone looks like they're having fun and they're doing a great job. When the tide goes out, and what does the tide going out mean? The tide going out means recession, means the economy not doing well, means your industry not doing well, means something that happens in your team which makes your business not do well. When that happens, if you're looking at your numbers, you're not swimming naked. If you're managing your numbers, you're not swimming naked. Otherwise, it's fun as long as it lasts, but it will stop lasting if you're not been looking at your numbers. So that's why I like the quote a lot.
Yeah, no, that's a great quote, actually. I don't think I've actually heard that before, strangely enough, but that's a marvelous quote. And just before we go then too, could you tell everyone, we'll have a link like over to Growth Idea as well, but you can... But can you tell everyone the best way to get in contact, how they can find out more about the book as well and about Growth Idea?
Well, the book score is on Amazon, so that's probably the best way to get it on Amazon, Kindle, etc. It's not. I've had enough pressure on me to put it on Audible, but I can't imagine reading out numbers 1,036,000, 2,053,000. So I said I'm not going to do Audible on this.
That's funny. So,
unfortunately, it'd be people who have to.
Well, you don't have to read it. You can get somebody to read it for you.
I also meant in terms of people understanding the lucidity that comes in when it's a lot of numbers in the book.
And
it's kind of a case study based book, so you can work along with it and learn a lot more. And I think personally, everyone should have it on their shelf just as a reference guide. So you can get the book on Amazon. I would prefer most people start with that. So you go through the book, at least get some of the fundamentals under your belt. You can get on our website, growthidea.co.uk, drop us an email, email at info@growthidea.co.uk if you want to have any other conversations. But like I said, most of it is simple stuff, not easy, but simple stuff. A lot of it is outlined. The financial bits are outlined in the book. So potentially start with a book.
Yeah, I think and thanks so much. Like it's been a marvelous conversation. I think it's a really great super important. I'm a numbers person too, and I know like it's a really important thing for people in business. So so thanks so much like for sharing all that and I'm sure like the book it sounds great. I'm going to check it out as well. And thanks once again. Have you got, and on parting note, have you got anything else that you'd like to share before we head off to the rest of our days?
No, I just want to thank you, Saul. Thanks for making this effort. I think the world of podcasts and your specifically podcasts like yours, that they're all there to help. So it adds to the stream of positive information that people are getting. So thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks. That's much appreciated. And so with that in mind, that's actually it for today, guys. Thanks so much for listening in again to our little podcast. Before we go, please leave any feedback as well as suggestions for any topics you would like us to discuss in future episodes. And thanks again for listening to the Grey Business Podcast, and we'll see you again soon. Bye, guys. Say bye, Amol.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye. See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business Podcast.